Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, the first thing I said to you when I logged on here and we started this call was, I have no idea how to feel about that game. Like, it happened.
And that encapsulates it perfectly. I guess the one thing I'd say is that, like, you've seen the upcoming schedule. We're going to talk about that on this show. This may be our last time for a few days to enjoy a win. So, damn it, I'm going to enjoy this win and, you know, be as blind. Well, maybe not blind, but I'm going to enjoy the good parts of this because we might not be getting it in the next week.
We're bird boxing is what we're saying, kind of.
We're bird boxing, yeah.
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 I think
for the greater good.
I think that's how it goes, although I think that was a horror film, and that kind of summarizes the next few games that the Lakers are going up against. So
yeah.
So that works. I wanted to start here, and today on the show we're going to talk about the game. We're going to talk about Lonzo. I have a point that I've been saving for Pete. I've said it previously on the show, but I've been saving it for Pete so far tonight. We're going to talk about the offense again. And like Pete said, we're also going to talk about the upcoming schedule. But I wanted to start here just in like a general standpoint. I was watching that game was really weird because even just in general, I thought the crowd was kind of apprehensive all the way around. And even when the Lakers went on a run, you know, they opened up an 18-point lead. And even as they were doing that, it never quite felt like the crowd was willing to stick their necks out all the way for them. Did you feel that weird vibe at the game? You were in the building.
Yeah, man. No, people are on edge. It felt like there was a like shark circling type of vibe to it. This would have been really interesting had the Lakers lost this game in terms of what, you know, I don't think it's as clear cut as Luke gets fired, because I think that that's something that I think it'd be hard to sell the genie when LeBron's out. But if guys like Magic and Pelinka wanted that and wanted to make the move toward that after losing to the Knicks, the Cavs, and the Bulls, if they lost tonight, that would have been the time to do it, yeah. Right? You probably have no better time during the season to make your case in that respect. So there are guys like Plaschke's there, and Plaschke's almost never there. And Brian Windhorst is there sometimes. And obviously he's a basketball guy, none against Brian. It's just like kind of these bigger name guys or you know, Plaschke's always looking for something to, you know.
to be wrong about.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, there's, you know, I can anyway. Yeah, I'll shut up on that. You know,
Plaschke could walk outside and tell me it's raining and I would still consult Siri. Like, that's how often he's wrong about everything. But sorry, I just can't help myself.
I'm just glad, just as a side, I'm just glad that style of
coverage
columnists is dying out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there aren't any young people doing that TJ Simers type of like, I'm going to say things, you know, be annoying and say things that are controversial just to get under people's skin. Cause yeah. You know, and get my hate clicks type thing. We're off the rails already, but yes, the vibe is weird in Staples and everyone was very tense cause we needed a damn win, dude.
Yeah. It felt like a trial almost.
yeah,
you know, like people are sitting on high and oh, that's a fair point to make. You still could be guilty, but that's a good point to make. Beating the Bulls is a good point to make, and it just had a weird vibe, and I was wondering if it matched you, if you felt that there as well. Yeah. Do you think, like, what do you think it would take to break out of that kind of trial phase? Is it just LeBron coming back, maybe winning a couple of these unwinnable games? Like, do you think it's possible for the young core specifically to regain the trust and support of a fan base that is kind of sort of annoyed by them at this point?
I do, but it's going to require LeBron being back.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm way less annoyed at the young core than, although Kuzma is irritating the hell out of me more than anyone else right now. But like a lot of what's irritating about the young core is a function of the offense being so bad, man. Yeah. Like there is a floor or the ceiling of what they're capable of doing with the current offense. Like, how many shots is Brandon Ingram really going to make out of 13 or 15 when all of them are so hard?
Yeah.
Like, so little of it is so easy.
Comes easy.
Same things with Kuzma. I'm not just talking Brandon. With Kuzma, yeah. With Lonzo to an extent, like, everything is hard. They get so few easy shots if it's not in transition, that's where my annoyance comes in. And LeBron coming back serves the same purpose of, like, a good offense, right? Of, like, LeBron is going to get guys open by the force of his gravity. So Kuzma is going to be shooting easier shots. Josh, Brandon, Lonzo, all of them, like, will get easier looks as a result of that. And I think people will be less annoyed with the young core. But there's only so much they can do when everything's this hard.
Yeah, I completely agree. We'll do this. We'll spend the next segment. We'll split it in half. I want to run by the point I was going to make about Lonzo. I want to run that by you. And then we'll keep on talking about the offense. And the need for a type of coach that it's kind of sort of surprising that basketball just ignores this job position. So we'll get to that here in a second. The Lakers, here's the point I was going to make about Lonzo. The Lakers are the worst team in the NBA if he floats for any stretch of time. Like, any time that he spends floating, it affects everything across the board.
You mean with Lonzo?
With Lonzo, yeah. Mm-hmm. If Lonzo floats even for a couple minutes at a time, that has a devastating ripple effect while LeBron is out. When LeBron is there, like, you can kind of make up for it. But if his kind of attention wanes or if his engagement wanes just a little bit, you really feel it with the team, either when he's off the court, period, or when he starts to do that kind of thing. He's very, very important to what the Lakers are trying to do. And that's, I think, the thing that I've learned the most over this 11-game stretch is just how vital Lonzo is to what the Lakers are trying to do.
I wish we could transfer some of Kuzma's irrational confidence into Lonzo, right? Yeah. Like, I would love to say, you know, Lonzo's doing too much right now.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like whenever he's given the opportunity, like, he might miss shots, right? But his assist to turnover ratio is really good. He is usually creating a good look for somebody more often than not. And I don't know if the numbers support it, but, like, I feel like when the ball is in Lonzo's hands is when we get the best offense. It also puts guys like Kuzma and Brandon into better positions, too. I would love for them to lean on Lonzo even more than they are as a way of getting him engaged and, you know, putting guys in better positions that are more natural to what they do. So, yeah, like, he can't drift, but it was awesome to see him, like, kind of take over a quarter, especially as a scorer.
He dominated that third quarter.
And it was, like, so aggressive and assertive, and it's going to be a challenge to maintain that once LeBron comes back. But, like, there's a lot in there. Like, I hope people can see that, like, there's a really good player in there. He's finishing better around the rim. He's just, like, starting from scratch at some very basic things that are very frustrating, you know? And I get why he drives people crazy. But, like, he's a below-average three-point shooter, but he's not bad. Bro, Kuzma's chucking at 29%.
Yeah.
You know, and I know his form isn't as weird as Lonzo's is, but, like, Lonzo's, there's so much made of his shot and the weird form and all that. And he's not good or even average at this point.
He's
like a 30. Yeah, he's okay. You know,
he's been their best shooter since LeBron went down from deep. Like statistically speaking, I think he finished that game tonight at about 38% from three since LeBron went down.
I just looked it up, 38.7%.
I like the way you put it. Do you think it's a function of design, or do you think it's a function of reluctance on Lonzo's part to go out there and get it? Because, like, I feel like I find myself just yelling at the TV, why are we running stuff through Ingram? Why are we trying to run anything through Kuzma? We know where that's going to go, right? Like, why do you think it's... Do you think it's a coaching staff not recognizing it, not going to Lonzo enough, or do you think it's Lonzo kind of taking a step back when he shouldn't be?
So I think it's both. I'm working on a video that I've gone down a bit of a rabbit hole on, but I'm feeling really proud of the progress I've made. I'm probably 30% done with it on what is wrong with the Lakers offense, right? And obviously that's going to take some time because there's a lot of things wrong with it, right?
It's like you just – is it just a gif of you rolling out a list that just runs down the, down the hall?
Yeah, right, like a cartoon, right? Yeah, it rolls down the stairs, basically. Let's put this into two different categories. This is oversimplifying concepts that are also better presented visually, but you have your after whistle plays and you have your no whistle plays, right? So your no whistle plays are, say you get a defensive rebound, right? You're not really going to run a set in the same way because the defensive possession is going to scatter your guys across the court. You know, this guy needs to be over in that corner. With a 24-second shot clock violation, you don't really have the time to set up. Like, by the time you get everybody set up, is 14 seconds left, and you run your first action. By the time you've done that first action, you're starting to get into shot clock issues. So what you want to do is play by principle in those type of situations where you have these like quick hitting type of plays or just these quick little actions that you can run that aren't terribly sophisticated, but it takes advantage of the defense not being set yet.
Yeah.
This is where the Lakers are worse at that than they are in set half court plays or like out of timeouts. Out of timeouts, they're actually, I think, a little bit above average, believe it or not. Their sets are way below average. Which are times where it wasn't necessarily a timeout, but say the ball got knocked out of bounds, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not a semi-transition type situation. So in those early offense, they don't have good early offense principles. They're often very confused on what could those and it's drag screens, quick pin downs, delays, stuff they were actually a lot better at last year, to be honest, even though they weren't very good then either. In them not doing that and having confusion, there is space for Lonzo to – I want Lonzo to be like, give me the ball. I'm the point guard. That is the time to do that. It's not the time when they run a set play and you're like, oh, why is Lonzo standing in the corner? It's like, well, that's what the play calls
for. That's what it calls for.
There are times in those early offense situations where I feel he gives it up too easily. Even – I love his outlets and hit-aheads and all that. He'll, like, make a cross-court advance pass that doesn't really create advantage, and it's to Brandon or to Kuz, right? And now it's like, okay, they're standing there. Oh, let's run a ball screen.
Yeah.
Those are times where I'd rather Lonzo just brings it up the court himself if there's no clear advantage. He very much philosophically is like, if there's a guy open ahead of me, I'm going to pass it to him. And that's great. I just think he does it a little too much. So – a very long-winded way of saying I think it's both.
Yeah, I think it's difficult with Lonzo to figure out, you know, what, you know, in the moment when he's being too passive, or when you would like you the play you described, you see that in the moment, you feel it in the moment, but I don't know if it's something that the Lakers are capable, quite frankly, of figuring out by design, avoiding those kinds of moments, or teaching Lonzo in video breakdowns, no, keep the ball on that side of the court, get it. See, that way, the one thing Lonzo has gotten better at is understanding what the defense does in response to a pass that he makes or a drive that he takes or something like that. He's gotten a little bit better at that. And as such, you can put that learning into practice here by keeping the ball, forcing the defense to really keep an eye on you in that strong side action. And then once you kind of have a better idea of where the defense is and what might happen, that's when you can, if you really are desperate to make that cross-court pass, that's when you can figure it out, and that's when you can throw that hit ahead. But yeah.
And that's something that is more harmful with LeBron out, because what happens on those plays when LeBron is around is, say, he'll make that cross court to Brandon, and there's nothing really available in transition for Brandon, and it's stagnating a bit. LeBron always goes like, give me the ball.
Yeah.
Like, he'll come up and take the ball from that guy. Mm-hmm. And now it's LeBron running that high ball screen, right? Which isn't sophisticated action or anything like that. But you've got one of the great players of all time. Like, you can still get value out of that possession.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Whereas now when that's done, it's with guys like Brandon or with Kuz, who have a much harder time creating scoring opportunities in those same type of situations. So I think Lonzo needs to be a little more judicious about that, especially with LeBron out.
Yep. I completely agree. We're going to take another quick second here, and when we come back, we're going to, just based on how long it took to explain what might be going on there with Lonzo, I think this next segment's going to go a little bit longer. I want us to have as much flexibility in it as possible. We're going to talk about the Lakers' offense, and I'll start it off by, it might be a hot take. It might be kind of a hot take. We'll see. We'll see what Pete's reaction to it is, and then we'll go from there. All right, I don't know if we have like a hot take sounder. Harrison took that with him when I fired him, but I'm kidding. I guess I'll just dive right into it. We're in year three of Luke Walton's tenure, and in the couple years before this, it was very easy to write off the lack of an offensive system or a lack of offensive production in the half court as, well, look at the pieces he has to work with, right? And we're now in year three of this. We are now 40-some-odd games into year three. And this year, with better players than he has had in years past, and we still have those same complaints about system. And to me, I think where people get lost in this conversation about Luke Walton is it's either fire Luke Walton or look at what he has to work with. And there's very little in between. To me, I think the best path forward for the Lakers, if Luke is even open to it, because we know head coaches like to bring their guys in. But to me, the best path forward is the Lakers need an offensive tactician. They need an offensive specialist to figure out a system here. Because if they have a person who is doing that right now, and I guess by some extent it's Jesse Mermes is kind of sort of that guy. Mm-hmm. But whatever they're trying to do right now, whatever Mermes is trying to do right now, it's just ugly. They get into these half-court situations, and it's just you're watching, and it's pickup basketball.
Yeah, they rarely create an advantage with their system.
Yeah.
You know, like the Lakers have issues shooting. That's the thing about this, is that there's blame to go all the way around, right? Everywhere. Like they put together this roster of playmakers and they barely pass the damn ball, right? Like they're third fewest in the league in terms of passes per game. There aren't shooters on this team. That is going to impact how teams defend them off of screens and off of their sets and things like that, right? So it's not all on the coaching staff.
Nope.
That said, some of the issues are so basic. So for example, I'll show this in the video that I'm working on. Some of the play design is very cluttered. You know how they try to run that play where it's the back screen lob for Lonzo? Mm-hmm. Sometimes that isn't available because the guy who should be in the corner is up at the wing, and that brings an additional body up into the lane that Lonzo is cutting through. So it's just a harder pass. There's more congestion.
Yep.
It reduces the likelihood that pass is going to be completed in an accurate way that can lead to the lob and the dunk, right?
And it changes the look at the pass too. The more clutter in there, the more reluctant the passer is going to be to make that pass in the first place.
Absolutely. And with that, we could even use the same play to go into the next thing that bothers me, is I always catch myself saying to myself, they'll run one action and then I say, now what?
Mm-hmm.
Right? The first thing we tried on this play did not work. Now what?
Right.
You have to have your now what's, your second options, your third options on individual plays. And they so rarely get into the second and third things that you should, like, if the defense takes away the first pass or the thing that they want to do, God help us in the playoffs, by the way, yeah, where they take the first and second and third and all that, right? Yeah. They're like, okay, now what? Oh, high ball screen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so those are coaching issues. Like, both things can be true. The roster is very poorly put together in a few senses. and the X's and O's, the schematics, and on top of that, the deployment, the guys they have, like Brandon Ingram is so incorrectly utilized that, you know, I've always expressed some concerns about him and things like, and I have, like, my frustration with all of it is way more toward the organization now and the coaching staff and all that than it is with Brandon. And so all of that, man, just like, it's the friggin' Lakers, man.
Yeah.
They should have some of the best people in the world on their coaching staff. I talk about this all the time, analytics, all that good stuff. Like, this is not one of the best X's and O's schemes in the NBA in the world, right? Luke's got a great personality. He has managed a difficult locker room in three different circumstances over 3 years. He is a fantastic defensive coach, but the offense is so bad that they need to do something about that. If it was football, the offensive coordinator would be let go at the end of the season, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. The way I kind of break it down when I'm watching games with Jen, especially, because Jen, I love her to death. She doesn't have a basketball background. She played soccer for most of her life. She got into the Lakers when we started dating, and now that the Lakers help pay the bills, she likes them just a little bit more. but one of the things that I always do with Jen is I'll just stop plays randomly with 12 seconds left on the shot clock, and I'll tell Jen, look at the way, one, where people are standing, two, how people are standing. There's so much that you can learn from the posture of a basketball player when they don't have the ball. Because, like, on a team, if you watch the Spurs play, there is almost never any downtime where two or three guys are standing around the perimeter with their hands on their sides and just kind of waiting for whatever to happen next.
Everything has purpose.
Yeah.
When you run a system correctly, everything has purpose.
And you believe in the system. I don't think the Lakers believe in their system. I compared it to this last night where I was at SeaWorld when I was a kid, and one of the trainers was talking after one of the shows, and he said that it's very easy to tell very early on when one of the whales just doesn't have it that show. You'll tell them to go do something, they'll roll their eyes, they'll just kind of like slip into it, and then whatever. I see the same kind of posture from the Lakers. They'll like, they'll start their initial set, and then it won't work out, and they'll just pick up, here we go again, got to create a really tough shot. And it doesn't seem like they believe in the system that they're running.
So, first of all, your analogies needs its own Twitter account. I spend half of shows wondering, where the hell is he going with this? Secondly, it is, and they're usually accurate. Like, you get there.
Yeah.
In this instance, it's like a vicious cycle, right? Where, like, the system is bad, and so when players run and try their hardest to execute the actions, they're still not getting open. And when you don't get open enough times doing the same thing, are you really going to like run hard through it or set that screen really well? You know, and then even if it was good action, it wouldn't work because the guys aren't cutting hard, setting good screens, right? And then so one exacerbates the other and vice versa. And so like this is part of it, that body language that you see, like, look, these guys want to score.
Yeah.
They want to, every ball player wants to score. They want to look good. They want to get praised. They want to be considered efficient and all that. If the Lakers system, the teams you see, like the Spurs and Milwaukee, teams that run good systems, everybody sets those screens hard. They cut hard because they know if they do, they're going to get open. And if they get open, hey, I can knock down that shot when the system doesn't get paid. Exactly. When the system doesn't do that, it's the absolute opposite effect. It's like, well, why should I bother? Because we're not going to get open anyway.
Yeah, it's become tough to watch. And I would tell anybody, if you're sitting there watching the game at home, every so often, just stop a play at 12 seconds left in the shot clock or so, in that 10 to 14 range. And you'll be one, the spacing is usually pretty bad. Two, the posture with the Lakers is usually pretty bad. Three, the person on the ball who has the ball almost always has their back to the basket and they're asking for a ball screen, and it just stagnates there. And look, the Chicago Bulls are maybe the saddest situation that the NBA has seen in a long time. Did you catch like Robin Lopez just like pouting there on the baseline because he won't get, they aren't buying him out because he wants to join the Warriors?
I did not see that. They sure played their asses off to prevent people from getting tacos though. And Jim Boylan is like exactly the type of dude that would like really,
yeah,
you know, like
he's
like
you, off like that was a right? win. Like he,
yeah, yeah. He's like, yep. Good played job, our guys. Best basketball last 90 seconds.
For your I tacos. Found myself wondering if the Bulls think or if Jim Boylan thinks that there's 30 seconds on a shot clock.
Oh man, there were so many. Yeah, no, it was brutal. Like watching the Lakers offense and then the Bulls offense. It's just like, this is torture for me. This is really like, this is like if I went to hell, but it wasn't for like really bad reasons. It was kind of like that first circle of hell,
yeah,
where you go because you don't deserve to go to heaven or purgatory. And so it's just like this minor irritant for all eternity.
Yeah.
I think my hell would look like two 90s style basket half court offenses trying to score, like where I wasn't like a really, really bad person, but just kind of a bad person. That's what it looked like for me.
Told a few too many white lies. It's kind of like in The Good Place. It's like the Cincinnati of good and bad places.
Yes.
All right. Last thing I want to talk about here, because it bears a lot of meaning, and this is why that Chicago game was so crucial. It was essentially a must win. Like I threw that terminology out there quite a bit. Listen to this. They go to Oklahoma City. They go to Houston, who are a completely different team with the way that James Harden is playing. They play against Minnesota, who also have been playing a lot better. They feel a lot better about the situation now that Tibbs is gone. Robert Covington and Dario Saric were good fits after the trade. They're a different team. Phoenix is awful, but Philly is playing good basketball. And then they come back home. They go up against the Clippers. Then they go to Golden State. They go to Indiana, to Boston, to Philadelphia, and then at Atlanta. Like, there's two winnable games in the next 10?
We're supposed to get some news on LeBron tomorrow, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or today when this pod comes out. Boy, we need good news, man.
Yeah.
Like, if it's a couple more weeks, you know, they're – they just need to stay attached, man. Like, they don't need to be the 8 seed when LeBron comes back, but they need to be within shouting distance. And bro, that schedule is tough. Like, there's, especially with the offensive firepower, you know, you can get a team on some nights, you know, if you can score. Like Atlanta, for example, is a team that has snuck up on some squads mm-hmm. this year because they could put up a buck 42, right? Like mm-hmm. Lakers would need the game to be freaking 70 minutes long to score 142 points.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, they need LeBron back. I know that's not, you know, a news bulletin.
Breathtaking analysis.
Right.
Yeah. But, like, no, supposedly what Shams Charania tweeted out yesterday or the day before was that James could miss another week. There's some, like, I don't know, it's that in-between spot between speculation and rumors and outright, you know, just fake stuff out there that, you know, LeBron might be, he would be back already if he believed a little bit more in the team, was I think the way, I think it was, I saw it on Twitter that Brian Windhorst was the one kind of speculating in that direction.
Oh, God.
When you hear that, what's your response? But other than your face, because your face right now is in a dark place.
Just like, really, like, so how does that get communicated? Like, does LeBron say that to someone and then a reporter has sources with, like, or does LeBron say that to a reporter, like, you know, I would be back now, but, you know, these guys,
LeBron's doing backflips down the hallway, I'd be good, but
no, these assholes over here, yeah. You know, like, I don't even understand. I guess my view on this has changed with like covering the team. It's just like, I have a better appreciation for like the chain of how you would get information. And I'm not a reporter, obviously. Right. But just when I hear things like that, I try to imagine the scenario in which that message was communicated. And I just have a hard time, like how does that get said in any plausible scenario?
If it gets said at all, I think it comes from like the 17th most important person in a camp who's just trying to get a reporter's attention.
100%. And I think that happens more than people realize.
Yeah. But yeah, no, the point here being, you know, as we alluded to earlier, we're just trying to enjoy tonight as much as we possibly can, because this next, I guess, couple weeks or so, it could get ugly really quickly. All that said, like, I think the speculation about Luke Walton's job being at risk because of the loss to New York, and then because of the loss to Cleveland, and because of the loss to, or potentially to, Chicago, I think I could ride with that speculation a little bit more than if he loses a bunch of games to Oklahoma City, to Houston, to Golden State. Like, those are like, all right, let's be a little realistic here. If we start seeing those rumors pop up again, they'll sound a little bit more ridiculous than they would have this last week or so.
Yeah, I mean, those would be hard games, even if you had LeBron and he wasn't rusty coming off an injury, like, yeah, under the best of circumstances. Had Rondo. Right. They wouldn't be favored with at OKC or at Houston, mm-hmm, in the best of circumstances, and maybe not even at home against the Golden State team that's starting to figure it out. So, yeah, I mean, if they were going to make a move in a political sense of trying to oust Luke, this would have been the game to try and do that. And I'm not saying that they would have, or I'm just saying that there was no better time for that than had they dropped this one.
Yeah, I would completely agree. That'll do it, though, for this episode of the Los Angeles Lakers, of the Locked On Lakers podcast. We will see how this next couple weeks go, but you know that no matter how it goes, we'll be back here to talk, either be thrilled with how things are going, or exacerbated, or somewhere in between. But keep on checking in with us, and we will talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one, Pete.
You too, Matt.